Coming up next on All About Android, the first episode of the 20s, and it's a big one. It's the CES episode, at least the beginning of CES. We talk about new assistant features, Galaxy S10 and Note 10 Lite editions. TCL has a couple of new phones that they're coming out with. OnePlus has a concept phone. We have a bunch of your emails and a whole lot more coming up next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/android. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 454, recorded on Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. Gonna have to get used to saying that. Your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And
I'm Florence Ion.
There we go.
We did it.
A little bit of back and forth.
Sorry, it's a new decade.
That's okay.
I have to get used to the buttons again.
I know how it works. Every decade, our technical directors, Victor included, have their memory wiped clean, and they start from scratch.
It's a new decade. It's a new Victor.
Yeah.
It's a clear, fresh start.
I feel like
we are programming him as we do the show.
Yes. Just call me C-3PO.
All right. Thank you, C-3PO. Joining us today, Juan Bagnell, just some gadget guy. You may have heard of him.
Some guy who does gadget talk. I haven't seen you guys since last decade.
I know. It's been a whole
decade.
Well, it hasn't been a whole decade, but it was last decade. Now, everyone, you know, has their opinions on this, and I certainly do, too. Anyone have any strong opinions about the, oh, it's not a decade because zeros versus ones versus whatevers? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I was very angry about that at the year 2000 to 2001, and okay. I feel like I've just mellowed. So it's exactly. Irksome in the way that you count mathematically, but any good excuse for a party, let's just have a party.
Yeah. Well,
Juan, are you sure that mellow doesn't mean you just got older?
Because that's definitely a part of it.
I just don't care anymore.
Because I'm starting to just let things go, too.
Here's the great thing about it, though. What we're not realizing is that we're getting all this great end-of-the-decade content that we're going to get again a year from now.
No.
That's fair. That's an optimistic way of thinking about it. I like that, Ron. That's a good spin.
That's also the position of somebody who makes content.
Yeah, probably so. The way I look at it, like when you talk about like music from the 70s or music from the 80s, you include 1980 in the 80s when
Agreed.
You think about that. So therefore, that's my clock. That's how I rate it. And
Agreed.
Come at me, bro. Whatever.
Wow. Wow, Jason's coming at 2020 with a whole new attitude.
Yeah, you know what? I got fresh new lingo. I got words, man. I got words. So,
but along with 2020, how many of us have already written the date wrong? Because I can't fix 2019. Like that doesn't scribble out.
Yeah.
You can't like 18 to 19. You could kind of fudge.
You can kind of fudge that. You can.
Yeah.
Well,
share an article with me. Sorry, just to completely derail your podcast already. 2020 is the year that we should all write the entire year. Security experts are saying that if you write just 20, then people can write two digits after the 20 for a 2021 or a 2022. So just a little heads up there for best practices and keeping your data and documents safe. Probably want to write both 2020.
That's a great tip. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Good thing we only made it to January 7th. Fantastic. I'm glad we know that early.
Could have been a disaster.
Thank you, Juan.
I guess it's a bad time to tell you guys about my erasable pens.
Don't use those. Don't use those.
Don't use those unimportant things.
Don't write checks with those.
Man, do you remember erasable pens in the 80s? Well, Jason does, but in the 80s when like you're like, it's an erasable pen, and you just use that eraser, and all it did was tear a hole in the paper.
Hey, I remember this too. They were around in the 90s. Thank you very much.
Did they ever? So they've improved on this technology, erasable pen technology?
Yeah, the Pilot Friction. Okay. They're pretty awesome. I have the erasable markers and the erasable highlighters, and I have just like the whole, somebody, Santa brought me the whole erasable pen library for Christmas.
Dang, Santa. Good job. Good pick. All right. Well, with that said, you know, I'm realizing in this moment we don't have a news bumper for you, Victor. The first episode of the decade, and we don't have a news bumper.
I think we need to just do it anyway.
All right,
just
I think Victor's we do.
Sake. I'm sure he's been working for 3 weeks on his first news bumper of the year.
It's probably, yeah,
of the decade.
The top of his New Year's resolution is to do news bumpers.
And wait, I have a piece of news.
So Ron has a piece of news. So it's time for the news, Victor.
Oops.
Oh.
See, I told you. It's a new decade, so I'm fumbling behind the TriCaster. But here's some CES news and maybe some news from Ron. Here's Android news.
I'm thinking you didn't think about it at all.
No, I didn't. There was actually too many things that I was thinking of at one time. And I was like, I could do this. Oh, I could do that.
To the point. It was so beautifully delivered.
It was actually very informative.
That was the true moment there.
It was very informative.
What I do find fascinating about Victor and the news bumper is that whenever I have the lead story in the news, he almost invariably always steals my thunder. Like, I'll like come up with a witty zinger or something ready, and I'm just waiting. I'm like, all right, we just got to get through the news bumper. And then he does it, and he steals my thunder, which is great because I love Victor, and I can't think of anybody else who I want to steal my thunder. But the news is CES is happening right now in Las Vegas, and none of us are there.
Oh, that is news.
I woke up yesterday morning, and I was like, oh, I'm still not in Vegas. Awesome. Yeah.
I know.
Although I got the con flu without going to Vegas.
It's just fascinating,
Well, there was like a West Coast funk in December. Like, I think invariably every single one of us just got something. It was pretty gross.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I had my flu shot, so I was fine.
Well, I did too, but that didn't stop this.
I did too. It did nothing. Yeah.
It was funny though, because I had I think I mentioned this back in December, but I had dinner with Tom Merritt a couple of weeks ago and Eileen in LA, and Tom, I was asking Tom, you know, cause he's saying he's going to CES. I'm like, oh, how you doing? And he's like, we're going in, we're doing what's the preview night? That's Comic-Con, but what is
unveiled?
Unveiled. He's like, then getting out. And I was like, that's smart, because I'm sitting on Instagram watching Michael Fisher and Josh Vergara and everybody there, and they just all look exhausted. And it's like, while I love tech and I love technology and I probably would have fun at CES, like in a recreational standpoint, I'm so relieved that we get to work CES from the comfort of our own home.
Hear, hear.
Yep.
So that said, Victor, let's talk about some hardware.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now we'll do the hardware bumper. That was a hearty news block.
2020, hearty. 2020, I'm all about smooth transitions.
We're starting strong. All right. So what do we have here? We're starting with who else? Google. Google is at CES this year. Google announced a number of new improvements to Assistant. So let's see here. There's Read This Page, Hey G, Read This Page. This is where Assistant will actually read an article or a page that you happen to be on while skipping over things like share buttons and irrelevant text that happens to be on the page. I imagine this is a work in progress. Like I'm curious to see how well it works on any web page you throw at it, whether there's any way to throw it off or anything like that. But there are apps that do this. We've featured a lot of those apps on the show at certain times. So this is one of those examples of Google taking something that exists and baking it into its own product. So very cool. Hey G, turn on the lights at 6 p.m. In other words, schedulable actions with your voice. That's nice. Kind of surprising.
Versus manually scheduling them as a routine.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. You could do this in the app. You could go in and do a routine. Now I guess you could schedule it with your voice. Kind of weird that you couldn't do that before, but there you are.
Yeah, you got to program it.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a while to program those letters and numbers in place. I'm totally not being facetious on that because I know it takes time. Place a sticky note on smart displays with Hey G. Leave a note that says derp a derp a der, whatever you want it to say. It's pinned there all day for everyone else to see. So this is for smart displays that might be in the
kitchen.
I'm going
to use this a lot.
In place of the post-it note?
Oh, yeah. This is, I'm going to use this a lot.
Cool.
Well, because I already set reminders, but the problem is it'll set the reminder just for me. And so it's a reminder for me to remind someone to do something.
Right.
Yeah. You know? My wife and I
and
have
then
a
if
very
like I'm not
aggressive.
At home, it pings and then my husband gets it, but like he doesn't necessarily know that it's for him. You know?
Right.
So this would be just like, it's like a universal billboard. It's just there for everybody to see. Like,
yeah. I actually really want this on phones because my wife and I have this calendar entry battle going back and forth to make sure.
I understand
not just,
this.
Hey, don't forget to do this thing. Also, I've given you the time frame because it's now in your calendar as an entry.
So that, is no longer valid.
Yeah, we've got too many options now.
which is a key negotiating tactic in any long-term relationship.
Yep.
Healthy relationship? Yeah.
Sure. Was it in the calendar?
Modern relationship.
It was.
You can paste speed dial options to the lock screen for calls, for quick calls to important numbers. So if you want some important numbers to be shown there, you can do that. Interpreter mode for language translation between two people. And I think there's a businesses kind of tie in here. A number of businesses are on board for that. And then when, you know, that weird thing that happens to me all the time when I'm doing this show where Google thinks that I said a hot word and then it starts to listen. Well, now apparently if I remember to, I can say, hey, G, that wasn't meant for you. And the history of that action and that recorded audio will then be deleted. Or I will just be like, whatever. There's like 5,000 times it's done that, and at this point, I don't care. All of this is coming later this year at some point, so it's not immediately available, but I think this was the extent of Google's announcements at CES. Was Google at CES last year? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yes, they were. Last year was when they had the Disney ride.
They still...
Oh, yes. You're right.
They have a slide this year.
Yep.
Which is ridiculous.
And they still take out that giant ad on the Las Vegas monorail.
Four side by
side slides. So the monorail goes around and everybody gets a big, big old Google ad.
Get some Google in their face.
Yeah. Oh, that's a slide that goes into a ball, a pit ball, ball pit?
Ball pit.
Ball pit.
Pit ball.
Pit ball. Almost. And then in rumory news, not related at all to the announcement, but I figured I'd throw it in here because it's Google. Pixel 4a case renders have apparently leaked. Mm. And so the rumors say that there will be no XL version of the 4a. So it's going to be apparently, if rumors are true, a single size option, the smaller option. So if you like the 4A XL, which would be the one that I would opt for, that might be a little bit of a bummer. Still a square camera module, as you can see with some of the cases here, while still only having a single camera. So that's kind of weird.
That's
gotta keep it
a bit
cheap,
silly.
Right? Or affordable.
That's kind of weird.
It's like, you know, some phones have stovetops. This is just a dorm room hot plate.
Right? Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe they'll release a kit where you can add your own camera to that fourth spot.
Well, weren't there a couple like really low cost Chinese manufacturers that were just putting lenses that didn't have any camera sensors behind them to make it look like they had multiple
symmetrical and normal?
Wow, you could do that here, I guess.
Yes, a little like a circular small sticker. A black sticker that you just kind of put there.
My daughter's going to love that.
We should think about this now because if we get ahead of this, we could make a little money on the side. I'm just saying.
I thought that just the fact that we've said it out loud means D brand's working on
somebody's it. Somebody's doing it. Yeah, somebody's going to do this already. Headphone jack apparently remains as well, if that's important to you, which a lot of people were happy to see that in the 3A. So there you go. That's all the Google news that's fit to print, fit to pod.
It's interesting with Google at CES because it's like part of it is I get excited because they're there, because they're making announcements, whatever. But these really aren't big. Right?
It's like a little feature dump.
Yeah, it's like a little feature. I don't know. I guess they have to be there because they're in the hardware game now, but way not to have anything really ready for it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so much of their marketing is built around Assistant whenever you're in Vegas for CES. Yeah. So it would make sense that these would be the services they would talk about. I wish they would delineate, like showcase what makes some of these things different than the current solutions we've had, like the reader modes. Like, we know next year we're going to get all kinds of automation built into the new Snapdragon chipsets and that this stuff is going to go on device. So in a press release, you don't really get the impact of, you know, we're going to read this website, but we're not sending it up to the cloud, analyzing the sites that you read and then sending audio back to you. This is happening all on your phone. It's, you know, the reader modes and the closed captioning on the Pixel 4 is actually pretty impressive, the way that it's able to do that locally.
Oh, yeah.
But it just seems like they never really get ahead of their own, like they never really like celebrate their own accomplishments in that regard. It's like, hey, here's some cool stuff.
But they haven't really told us why it's cold. They do it at Google I.O. though.
Right. But, you know, to be releasing this stuff here at CES, it'd be nice if they took the extra time in their own press release just to say, oh, and this is different.
It would. Because. It would. But CES is literally like it's so I think a thing that we have to remember about CES is that it is literally a marketing show. It is not like it's put on by the Consumer Trade Association, which I think is a lot of things that we have to remember. Like their whole thing is, this is how we're going to sell the tech to you this year. And that really is like CES. I think that's like the bigger scope of it is this is how tech is going to be sold to people this year. And so this announcement, like, yeah, it's like really helpful, bunch of helpful stuff, but we're not going to find out about how really those of us here on this panel, like we're not going to get the information we want until Google set aside that time to like give us that information, which is like at the developers conference. This is just an easy way to be like, hey, people, like here's what we're doing, by the way, in case you forgot, because you haven't been paying attention to any of the events that we put on last year. Yeah. So I think that's why it's like very surfacey versus
I laugh because the way that they release this information actually does feel kind of passive aggressive like that. Like, oh, here, if you haven't been paying attention to what we really do.
Yeah.
Here's a new assistant mode that can like sticky note on your
and
screen,
a ball pit.
And a ball pit. And a ball pit. Go, consumers. This is what
Which,
you care
honestly,
about anyway.
Bring it to Google I.O. because I would like a ball pit. There's enough room to put one.
Yeah, true. Why are you holding out on your ball pit, Google? Huh? I just woke it up. I didn't actually say it.
What is the thing that
I say?
That's being recorded, and it's going back to the labs, and they're going to know we want a ball pit this year.
and all it detected was Baltic Google.
We don't want that.
We don't want
Baltic Google. That's going to bring
we're
a lot
so
of
far from the Star Trek computer. We get
so
closer
Baltic
every
Google.
Year, but still so far.
Yeah, oh, so I have before we move on, I have a very funny Google Assistant, Google ecosystem kind of story before we move on quickly. Has nothing to do with the announcements, but it just shows how Google's creating this multi-tentacled beast that sometimes gets out of your control. I have YouTube TV, which we've talked about a lot, and that allows you to share it with up to 5 other family members, right, in the family sharing. So I've shared YouTube TV with my wife and with my parents and with my sister, right? That's my family. Me and my wife use Google Calendars, and when we have something going on, my wife will set up she'll set up an event and send me an invite. I'll get it or whatever. Somehow, when you add members through YouTube TV, it creates a family group.
Yes.
And it creates a family calendar.
Yes.
And on my wife's Google Calendar, it defaulted events to family. And so a couple of months ago when my wife was in Chicago for business, my dad texted me. He's like, are you going to Chicago? And I was like, no, she is. He's like, oh, I have an event on my calendar that says you have a, you're leaving out from the airport today. And I was like, no, that's her. And then my sister texted me. She's like, oh, the cleaning lady's coming today, huh? And I was like, I didn't know that. Right? And like, so it took me like 2 weeks to untangle this. I'm looking at the event, trying to like, I'm like, all right, it says she sent it to me. Like their email addresses aren't on the event listing or anything like that. And then I saw calendar family. I'm like, what is that? And I saw this calendar can be seen by these people. I was like, oh, delete that. I don't want them to see that.
No kidding.
Yep.
That's kind of a mess.
My best friend is on mine, which that made for some interesting text conversations.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a step too clever for their own good, because that's a feature that, again, probably should have been explained a little bit better when you were setting it up.
Right, and it kind of runs, it spins out of control, and I didn't even know it was happening. Like, it's a little too smart in that regard. And so,
well, you're seeing the doctor today. What did the doctor say? Like, hello, Hippocratic oath.
My sister keeps texting me, no secrets. Transparency.
Oh, and you know your siblings are gonna run that hard. You know, they're not gonna let that go.
So there's a little story of Google that's world.
That's really interesting. I'm kind of surprised that doesn't have a little bit more attention, because that sounds like a potential privacy kind of issue bubbling up.
What if you're planning a surprise birthday party, right?
Yeah.
And you were just trying to like.
Yeah,
that's what you get for sharing your YouTube TV.
Totally.
Yeah, right?
It's been a nice thing, and this is what happens. Yeah,
so. Totally. That's just kind of crazy. Just kind of crazy. So Flo, what is are you still the manager of the Samsung fan club, or was that years ago?
Ooh. Well, this year I'm not going to have as much time to serve in the position because I'm becoming a fan of.
You soured on it a couple of – I mean, like, you were the president of the fan club.
The president,
but then, like,
that's right.
Yeah, I feel like a couple of years ago we said you moved on from that position because you weren't as much of a fan.
Okay, so. That's right.
I haven't been using the phones, but I've been using – like, Samsung is still so good at doing the accessories that the rest of the Android ecosystem isn't doing.
Yeah, totally.
Earbuds, smartwatches, that sort of thing. And now they're getting into light mode. So light being LITE, releasing light versions of the Galaxy S10 and the Note 10, actually. So that's what was actually announced at CES in these last couple of days. And both have 6.7-inch Super AMOLED displays, which is 2400 by 1080 with Infinity O display. They come in 6 or 8 gigs of RAM. They have the patent in-display fingerprint sensor, 128 gigs of storage, 4,500 milliamp batteries, much bigger than what both of the Pixels have currently. And they have Android 10 out of the box, which is a good show, considering that there was a lot of rumbling about when the current crop of phones would be getting Android 10. The S10 Lite, so now the S10 Lite is a little bit different inside. It has an Exynos chipset, which means it might not be coming to the US. And it has a triple camera system, so 48 megapixel main camera and 12 megapixel f over 2.2 aperture ultra wide, as well as a 5 megapixel macro. So you have all the different kind of bits of photography you can do in there with those lenses.
Like
they're
the
not
macro.
Stickers. They're like real lenses. And the Note 10 Lite has a little more power. And I'm assuming this is coming to the US because the inside it has a Qualcomm Snapdragon 855. It has a headphone jack, an S Pen. It also has a triple camera system, 12 megapixel wide camera, optical image stabilization with 1.7 aperture, 12 megapixel f over 2.2 aperture ultra wide, and a 12 megapixel f over 2.4 telephoto lens on the back. So again, you have everything you need to take any kind of picture wherever you are in a phone that costs, assumingly, a fraction of what you would pay for the regular Note 10 at local carrier.
I don't know if they gave a price. If they did,
I'll be curious to see how much cheaper this is, because we're sort of I was so positive on Samsung's mid-ranger game, how they refreshed the A series last year. that now doing S light versions in that weird Venn diagram overlap of what's the bang for buck, what's the value proposition here, that there could be a light version of a Note 10 that has a headphone jack that's cheaper than the regular Note 10 for very similar specs and performance. Like, I have a lot of questions. I have some concerns over Samsung's spreading portfolio here.
So as far
as... we've seen this before.
They go through these like ebb and flows. Like sometimes they'll focus in on a couple lines and then execute those really well. And then they sort of let that sort of device lineup creep and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they kind of whittle it back down again. Yeah. So I just curious, like I'm very interested to see where they're positioning these different models for different consumers and for different regions, that we might not be getting some of these here if they're Exynos variants, or knowing that some of the Qualcomm from last year chipsets can outperform some of the Exynos variants. It's going to be a more confusing year for placing how much money do you pay on a Galaxy and where do you expect that performance to fall.
I'm looking at an article that says the Samsung confirmed. It's an article at sammobile.com, so maybe there's a better source, but confirmed
the S10. Sammobile's a okay source. Yeah, okay. It's fine.
Galaxy S10 Lite will start at €649, around $720 US.
Jeez.
And
man.
Note 10 Lite.
What a deal.
At €599, so about $670 US.
Which
so
that's not too bad. My first glance at this was that, oh, wow, okay, so Samsung sees what Google's doing with the 3A, and they see what Motorola's doing, and they say, okay, let's move closer to the middle and go to the mid-range. But clearly, Samsung's definition of the mid-range is much different than the rest of the world with the $750 phone.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but I mean, if you look at a Galaxy S10 Lite versus – I mean, a Galaxy Note 10 Lite versus a Galaxy Note 10 – I mean, what is that? Full retail, a $300 price difference? Yeah, like, that's a compelling argument know that there will be some compromises. There have to be some compromises between their premium crown jewel line and then this light version. But I bet that we could make a solid argument for those differences falling into areas where consumers likely won't care.
Well, but then furthermore, I'll push on behalf of the mid-rangers. Imagine if that Note 10 Lite came in at $499.
Mm-hmm. There's always a fun gadget enthusiast. Yeah. Oh, it should cost less.
True.
You say that about practically anything. But what I mean is, like, when we see the Lite, if a Note Lite were to come to the United States, how quickly would that be fodder for an MVNO? Where
how would it be marketed?
It launches at $600, but we all know it's really going to be $400 if you sign a carrier deal, or it's going to be $200 if you're trading in another phone. I mean, we play this game with Samsung a lot. Most of their products are not worth $1,000 at that full retail sticker. And if you're a savvy consumer, you never pay full retail what these things cost.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm savvy and we won't talk about me. Actually, I would like to talk about me again, if that's okay. So I was really salivating over another Samsung announcement at CES. Oh my God. It's so hot. That Galaxy Chromebook. Mm-hmm. Did y'all see it?
I did.
It comes in red, in a red color that is just, that emoji that, what is that emoji? The emoji.
I don't know. There's a lot of them. Which one?
The one where it's like a chef's kiss.
Oh, okay. We didn't have your video, so I couldn't see you.
Yes.
All right. Chef's
kiss. I have to explain it anyway for the audio listeners.
Yes.
So this Galaxy Chromebook, it's super svelte. It's got a stylus that inserts into the side, and I'm a big fan of having a stylus on Chrome OS. I'm just a big fan of having a stylus, to be honest, just because of the way my brain works. So this Chromebook is starting at 1,000. So it's about in the same vein as what we had with the Pixelbook.
Definitely.
13.3-inch 4K AMOLED display. Super nice and high res. It'll make it really nice for scrolling websites, getting work done, watching TV as you do. 2.3 pounds. So nice and light still. You just kind of drop it in your purse and go on the go. And it comes with 8 gig or 16 gigs of RAM, up to a terabyte of storage. And on the inside, it's got that latest 10th generation Intel Core i5. So this is just, I think this is the best thing to come out of CES for Samsung. Personally,
it's a purdy
in my own. If we're talking about me here and what I care about.
Really. I figured you would be pretty pro this. Yeah, it looks really nice. I would love to play around with it as well, especially because, well, I mean, we are both big time Pixelbook fans. And I feel like Google has done really well in the kind of premium Chromebook category. There's still the people out there that would be like, but why would you ever spend this much on a Chromebook? And
it's worth it.
Oh, it's like if you want a Chromebook, these are the best of the best. They just work really
Are we pretty
perfectly.
Confident that we're not going to get a Pixelbook 2? Like, I've spent some time with the Pixelbook Go, and it kind of brought me back into the Chrome OS Fold, funnily enough, because it also sort of rekindled the love of playing with Linux at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I was kind of expecting, like, we'd get this Pixelbook Go, we'd play with this for a couple months, and then Google would give us the refresh on the more, uh-huh. What is it, Lenovo-style folding.
Premium.
Premium maybe. Version.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that they've got another one coming at some point.
I think Samsung just has a little more design prowess when it comes to this. I think when Google designs hardware, it really designs it to what it wants the software and the AI to do, which obviously makes sense because that's Google's whole MO.
That's what
they do. Yeah. But I'm thinking in terms of just like getting something that's just super durable, really stylish. I really like the fact that this has like, I know this is like a little thing, but presently, I have to carry the stylus for the Pixelbook, the Pixel Pen, in a little pencil pouch with me everywhere
pencil
I go.
Pen in a pencil pouch?
And it's kind of big and bulky. Versus, I would love to be able to just have the S Pen just embedded in. It's just these little things that you kind of consider when you think about design. So I don't know. It'd have to be a pretty compelling laptop.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like that it's.
And the Pixelbook was kind of the pen. First of that. To really, it really like set the stage for what Google wanted people to do with Chrome OS in terms of how they wanted it to be packaged. And totally. I think now we're going to, like, this is the year we're going to see the really high-end Chromebooks that come out with, like, all that 10th generation Intel processing and, like, just so you can be able to do all the things with it, not just browse the web and, you know, watch a video.
Yeah, it does seem like Samsung is realizing what they set out to do with the first Pixelbook. But I guess after the slate, they just seem to be getting a little gun shy. I mean, the Pixelbook Go is a great little sort of
Surface laptop it's a different competitor, market, right?
But again, it's like I still want to see the company behind Chrome OS make their argument for what a premium version of their experiment should look like.
Right, but how long did it take for them to make what the premium phone for Android should be? Right? Like I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But how long before we got to the Pixel?
Right. But I think it's one of those things where there's definitely a market perception at play because, you know, Microsoft is still building market share on the Surface, and the entire Surface lineup makes up less than 5% of Windows sales. And we don't talk about the Surface as it being like, oh, only 4.5% of Windows users are using these things. I don't know that they're as popular as Microsoft wants them to be. I think they are exactly what Microsoft wants them to be. Microsoft doesn't want to be stepping on competitors' toes to make other types of Windows machines. That's why I'd kind of like to see the same from Google. Like, we're putting out our version, and now Samsung can do something also very interesting over here too. It feels a little shaky. They're not quite as confident in their direction after the slate didn't manage to get off the ground.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Cool. One last little Samsung tidbit before we move on from Samsung. The Samsung Unpacked event was announced at CES somewhat surreptitiously. It happened Saturday night for those who were still enjoying the last bits of their holiday week with their family. This was announced under the radar. Samsung Unpacked will happen Tuesday, February 11th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, which, you know what, I think that'll be nice for couple people. It might be annoying for a couple other people, you know, time zones.
And all that, as they are.
They make everybody happy all the time.
Per usual.
You know, can't please everybody around the world. Samsung is expected to unveil the Samsung Galaxy S11, or according to, I guess this is a new leaker, Ice Universe.
No, Ice Universe has been pretty solid, actually.
Okay, I haven't really seen, yeah, this is, Ice Universe is a little new to me. So I guess I'm the okay boomer of leakers at this point because I'm a little behind on who's doing the leak. And possibly the next fold, the one that we were talking about that goes clamshelly instead of opening up like a book. That, as we saw, that didn't work too well. Leo and Jason will be covering it. And, you know, I would love to go, but my baby's almost ready to come out of the oven. So I'm not gonna be going.
Hey, now.
Some people are dedicated to their jobs and they have that commitment, and some people don't, and that's fine, Flo. I guess that's just.
Oh, jeez! I do not want to go into labor at a Samsung event. That is not the best that could happen.
Yeah, it would be well documented, Flo. Everybody would have their phones and their cameras all ready to go. So.
And doesn't that sound fun, Flo?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Samsung would appreciate that. Flo just came to make it all about her.
Wow. The thing about Samsung is that we create devices that let you capture life's moments. Oh, you could hear him. You could hear old. What's his name? DJ Ko? Is that DJ Ko or who's that? Yes, right.
And I'm just DJ Ko up there. Screaming. Yes.
Oh gosh.
I was a little surprised at how many people seemed to think that the name of the next Galaxy phone was as big a news story as it's turned out to be, and. Really, I'm just sitting back and a little appreciative that we're not going to have, you know, 11s and S's, you know, that just it's the year 2020 and this is the Galaxy S20. And for some reason that fits in my brain and then we can just move on with our lives.
Yeah. People love to talk about nonsense. I mean, they're going to call it what they're going to call it.
Yeah. But like, isn't that a little surprising? You skip a number and people act like that's somehow profoundly different because the label on the box is going to be different.
I'm not surprised at all. Nah. I mean, look at everything we've seen from the move from Android Q to Android 10, right? All that nonsense. I mean, it's literally what doesn't matter. Oh, the name, cool. Let's do blog posts about that. You know, I'm not surprised. So. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, last bit in hardware. There's a new player into the hardware phone arena. TCL announced three TCL 10 devices at CES. They're all going to be under $500. You may be asking yourself, who is TCL? You might be familiar with TCL because they've got some very affordable 4K TVs that have Roku integrated into them. But they've also been in the shadows as the white label solution for Alcatel, the BlackBerry Android phone. And actually, we had on last year the guys with the tiny little – the new Palm phone that's made by TCL. As a white label option. And so now they're aiming to do with mobile phones what they've done in the TV space – and create and provide quality at a much lower price point. So we got three phones. The TCL 10 Pro is the first one, which has got four rear cameras, a headphone jack, USB-C port, running a Snapdragon 765G. It's got a glass design display, and that's what everybody's talking about with this phone that impressed everybody, saying it blows the Samsung phones out of the water. It's going to come in around $500-ish, no specific pricing yet, available in the U.S., Canada, and elsewhere later this year. And then they also showed off a foldable concept phone. You know how much I love foldables, that folds inward with a flexible OLED display, folds completely flat, no outer display. And at this stage, it's completely a prototype and it's early, but they're likely and they're aiming at undercutting the price of premium foldables, which is key because all the foldables we've seen have been ridiculously expensive. And so I would love to see an affordable foldable, and especially, you know, some of the photos we saw from the show of it look real, real interesting. So what do you guys, Juan, what do you make of TCL? Are these actually going to have some legs underneath them or what?
I'm really positive on this move. I mean, we haven't seen this transition since like the classic days of HTC, when HTC was an ODM back in the Windows Mobile days. And this is a firm that has a ton of experience manufacturing. They showed off. I forget what it was called. It was like Dragon something folding concept.
Dragon
at
Hinge
CES last
it?
Year. Something the Dragon like Hinge. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So this is an outlet that really knows their way around different phone builds. I'm actually spending a little time with a budget Alcatel right now, just wrapping up some budget and cheap phone reviews. And they've consistently, especially under the Alcatel label, have been making some great bang for buck devices that are actually surprisingly popular at some of the low-cost carriers and some of the MVNOs out there. So to finally just step out from behind other labels and put their own brand name forward, I think is always a positive move to see that we're still growing, that we're still building, and that the entry-level and mid-range market is going to be, again, another step exciting for 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am curious to see, hear more details about this foldable and, yep, the hinge. And are we going to have the crease? Is that going to happen? What's going
to
happen?
Are they going to be able to like undercut the Escobar? Is that a thing? Is that a...
the guys, Escobar? That isn't
did we talk about the Escobar?
I know. It's kind of like, do we? We talked about it a few episodes ago, probably like a month, month and a half ago when it was with news. Very delicately, we talked about that phone.
Yes.
There is actual news about the Escobar phone. They wanted to be at CES, but CES wouldn't let them.
I can't say I'd blame the Consumer Electronics Show.
I can't say. Yeah. I completely agree. We have a voicemail. No, sorry. This is a video mail from Matt Coddington. Big fan of the show. Love getting messages from Matt. Matt has, and it's a little on the longish side, but that's because he's walking us through a few things and actually demonstrating. So it's a great video. It's about 2 minutes long. Assistant and shopping lists via Keep, which we've talked about on the show. Matt, take it away.
Hi, this is Matt from Louisville, Kentucky. I wanted to show you something I discovered with the new Assistant integration with Google Keep Lists, which I love using, and I love the potential of it, but there's a catch. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add something to my demonstration list here, but I'm going to use my Pixel Book rather than have to use the hot word on my Pixel 4. Add hammer to my demonstration list.
All right, I added hammer.
And there you go, hammer now is on the demonstration list. But here's the catch. I also use Assistant-enabled Bluetooth headphones, and I use them a lot. I conjure up Assistant all day long, so I was excited to be able to add something to a list, but watch this. Add screwdriver to my demonstration list.
Okay, I've added screwdriver to your shopping list.
You might not have heard that, but she said, okay, I've added screwdriver to your shopping list. So I go over to my Google shopping list, and I'll refresh, and there's screwdriver. Isn't that lovely? So I'll go back over to the Google Keep Note, and wait, there's more. I use Android Wear, so I can conjure up Assistant on Android Wear as well. Add nails to my demonstration list.
Okay, I've added meals to your shopping list.
To my shopping list. Isn't that wonderful? I go back over to the shopping list, I refresh. Oh, and it even called it meals. But you get the point. So obviously, the teams that work on Assistant on headphones, the team that works on Wear OS, they're not using the latest and greatest API to integrate with the Google Keep Lists. And it's quite frustrating because you would figure in this ecosystem, the experience should be seamless. No matter where you're at, no matter how you're using Assistant, you should be able to do this. And such is the pains of a large company with many teams. Just want to hear your thoughts on it. Thanks. Love the show.
Love that you put that together, Matt. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I was going to say before we address that, kudos to Matt for doing the screenshot with the circle with his head in it. Like, bravo, my friend.
I know, it was pretty
I am very impressed with the production there, and I encourage other people to submit videos like that because that was awesome. So
yeah, absolutely.
You set the standard very high, so exactly, the videos have to be that good. I'm sorry, listeners.
Yep, that's the baseline now. Thanks a lot, Matt. You can blame Matt. I won't give you his email address though. I mean, what do I think about this? Like, I hate to say it, I'm just not at all surprised. Like,
yeah.
You know, like
disappointed, but not surprised.
Right. Well, we say it all the time. Google are the kings of the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
And who knows how long it's going to take for those other platforms to
catch up.
It was
something like my wife and I were on OneNote because whenever we would try and engage with our various lists and stuff, again, on our passive aggressive phone calendar communication relationship, we would run into those issues all the time. My wife would say, well, I added it to the list. And you're like, I don't see this at all. And it was literally just a shopping list on her phone that was getting these updates and these information. And so we eventually just walked away from everything and we've been using OneNote instead. So it's one of those things. It's like every single time we get a new Google Assistant feature, I feel like there are a lot of consumers out there that are going to try it once. You're going to run into a roadblock very similar to what Matt just showed off in that video, and then aren't likely to ever try ever again, even though we know that this is something that Google will improve and probably iterate on fairly quickly.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's those little roadblocks that the one time you think to do it and then it doesn't do the thing it's supposed to do. I mean, that's totally how I operate. I've only, in the last year really came around to Google Pay because of all the times that I had used Android Pay and all the other smart, other iterations of it where it didn't work 100% of the time. It was like, okay, well, then I'm not going to use it. If it's going to create more time in trying to make that payment than just pulling out my credit card and doing it. So I never went back to it. Now I'm gone back to it and it works 100% of the time. I love it. I'm using it so much now. A lot of people don't even make that revisit. They're just like, moving on.
I mean, I feel like for those of us, and especially for your audience, a lot of us make that second try happen because we need to, if I weren't a tech reviewer, I don't think I'd be going back to look at these things as often as I do.
Totally.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right, let's take a break and thank the sponsor. And then we actually do have another hardware block because there's more stuff from CES to talk about.
Shocking.
Shocking, I know. But first, this episode of All About Android is brought to you by Mint Mobile. I love Mint Mobile. I've been using Mint Mobile for months now. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're actually paying for between expensive retail stores? There's inflated prices, hidden fees. You're being taken advantage of because they know you're going to pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations. They save on overhead, and then they pass those savings directly to you. We're so used to, on this show especially, like buying these things, buying stuff online, not having to go into a brick and mortar store. You know, I remember years ago on All About Android when the idea of buying your phone from the site, because a company's selling direct versus actually walking into a carrier store, that just seemed like such a strange requirement. Well, now we're so much more used to this. We live so much of our lives online. So it makes sense that Mint Mobile's online approach works so well. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, you can stop paying for unlimited data that you're never going to use. You just choose between plans with 3, 8 or 12 gigs of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. You can port that number over. That's exactly what I did. I came over from Google Fi, ported my number over, and it was seamless and easy. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile now. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free, just go to mintmobile.com/android. That's mintmobile.com/android. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month with our 3-month introductory plan. mintmobile.com/android. And we thank Mint Mobile for their support. All right, Flo, you got this fun one.
Oh, I just realized we're not doing a bumper.
No, we don't need to do a bumper.
We're still in hardware.
Yeah, I know. We're still in hardware. So over the holiday, beginning kind of before, I guess I should say, before Hanukkah, before Christmas, there were a couple of tech journalists that you may know who were talking about this OnePlus McLaren edition that was kind of floating around. And it it really caught a lot of eyes. It caught a lot of folks. So now OnePlus is showing off its Concept One, which is a device that is a symbol of its continuation of its work with McLaren. And yes, when we're talking about McLaren, we're talking about the car company. But, you know, let's think about this from an aesthetic point of view. So usually when we look at OnePlus, it's just a phone, right? I mean, it's got its own little design going. But if you're thinking about the McLaren version, this has leather with accent stitching. It has a glass area that covers the rear cameras, which is electrochromic, which is just a cool word to say. But of course, this means it hides the cameras until the camera app is open. So it just looks like plain black, nothing is there. And then it shows the cameras in apparently 0.7 seconds when you reveal it, that you need it. This tech is also included in the McLaren 720S supercar to protect passengers from the sun. So it's just kind of a little nod to some of this car tech that is, some of this cool car tech that's being used. It's also useful to act as a filter for pictures to kind of help dial in the right exposure. So think about like a thin transparent screen maybe that you would use in front of the lens to kind of help, or like a filter that you would put, a polarized filter that you would put on your camera to kind of help with the light coming in. And the rest of the specs inside of it are the same as the 7T Pro. Alongside also announced the optimized charging. So there's no doubt this is probably something we're going to see down the line in other OnePlus devices. This is aimed at lengthening battery life by keeping it from degrading over time. So it charges your phone up to 80% and then it stops. And then it waits to top it up to 100% until 100 minutes before you are expected to take off the charger. So it's going to use a little bit of that AI magic, kind of counting, you know, okay, I'm plugging in my phone at night, I'm about to wake up at 7:20 kind of thing. The phone will just sort of know. It will follow your daily habits to do this, but there is no word on when it will roll out. It's just a fun new feature. Well, I shouldn't even say fun. It's a helpful utilitarian feature that OnePlus is working on, and kind of a reminder of why we put up with some manufacturers when they kind of release their own proprietary thing, because sometimes there's a pretty cool reason behind it.
I think the McLaren phone, if you pull up a photo of that again, Victor, it looks like it's wearing a shirt.
Or like a vest.
Yeah, like
a vest.
Say, I was going to say like a sweater vest. A life vest.
I gotta say, I shouldn't be disappointed, whatever, but I was hoping that OnePlus Concept One was a little more edgy, innovative than just teaming up with McLaren again and doing stuff. And the invisible camera is cool, and the battery stuff is cool, but I don't know. I wanted no bezel or foldable or something.
Well, like, and I don't think the optimized charging is isolated to just this. Yeah. I think that's for other
everything.
Phones. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
From what I understand. So that's not even a McLaren feature. Really, it seems like the McLaren feature is the glass that changes, which is kind of, that is kind of interesting that that's the feature, right? Like
it's
the
cool.
thing that they're touting. Yeah, it's neat. How necessary?
I'm really stoked on it from like a content creator standpoint, because it is very difficult finding a good solution to cut light on a phone. I did a Sony event, and the people using Xperia 1s had these funky custom built 3D printed cases so they could screw on actual camera ND filters. And we've all been waiting. Like, you have this type of tech in point and shoot cameras. This is something that if you care about that kind of composition, you're going to be very excited about. And then also just,
that's a good point.
I'm so happy to see a phone that has some other material on the back other than glass. I am so tired.
Okay, but Juan, doesn't this remind you of the LG G4 though?
But I have my G4 over there with the oxblood, the maroon back. It's still
the oxblood leather.
The prettiest phones ever.
So
I have my Moto X2 Moto Maker with
just
blue leather.
Just a refresh. The LG G4 had leather backing on it, just for those who have no idea.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
as a big fan. As a real big fan. And so, it's interesting watching Huawei team up with Porsche design. And OnePlus team up with McLaren, and we've got two phones now that are premium that have some other material.
They did this back in the flip phone days too, when I forgot who the phone, but they were teaming up with car manufacturers all the time to like have these like,
totally.
Or maybe it was, they were doing high fashion actually back then. They were like the Gucci phone, the Louis Vuitton phone.
Right. I remember that. And I feel like we have to represent our good friend Mateo here in identifying that none of these offer a Maka dial back.
Yes,
so
yes.
Just keep that in mind.
But I am happy to see the battery charging feature make it to more devices too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was another thing that I very much like that feature on Sony phones. They've been doing that for a while where they've got a very hard time limit on when you charge the most stressful last remaining percentage of your battery. So this is just, you know, I think this is a wonderful feature. You've got some of the fast charging for when you need it. And then they're mm-hmm. also looking at some of those battery health considerations too. Mm-hmm. I'm not too surprised that for a concept, you know, their crazy showpiece at CES, OnePlus isn't really a company that built their rep on outlandish or radical design. I mean, their main thing is streamlining and focus and performance, making sleek, speedy devices. So this feels right. I mean, I'm with you, Ron. I'm always going to love and salivate at something completely outlandish and something really out there. But I'm not too surprised that this is what OnePlus ultimately showed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Cool.
Well, so
one thing you're not going to find Maka dial on is the new game controller that Razer announced. It's a game controller designed specifically for smartphones called the Razer Kishi, K-I-S-H-I. And it's actually similar to the Switch Lite layout that sandwiches the phone between two controllers. And it fits flush with most smartphones and connects through a wired connection, not wireless or Bluetooth. So very important to note that. And it allows for pass-through charging. And it works with Android devices with USB centered on the bottom. And it also works with iOS. So look at Razer making a very innovative cross-platform focused on gaming controller accessory. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love this. I'm really excited about this. I would love to get it and test it with Stadia and see how it works with that. I'm actually really looking forward to this coming out. I want to get it and play with it. And just the fact that they're making it not just tied to their own devices. You know, they basically said as long as the phone has the USB-C port on the bottom centered, which is really where most companies nowadays on, you know, mid to upper level smartphones are putting that port. So I imagine it's relatively easy to standardize around that, although sometimes you don't know what the depth is of that port. So maybe there must be some sort of positioning capability in this thing to be able to move it forward or back to be able to hit the port just right. But I'm curious to see how it works.
Two things.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping other people can also weigh in on this. Exactly your point in that I think a lot of us have cases on our phones. So the depth on that USB-C port and where it lines up on that bottom edge mm-hmm. isn't always completely centered or completely flush. And two, I really hope the USB port can do audio pass through. Mm. It is one of my biggest pet peeves in a world with no headphone jacks that Bluetooth audio always lags in games.
Yeah.
So even though it's not Bluetooth for, I mean, I love this is genius. It's great for the actual controller input to be as lag free as possible. But I'm really hoping that bottom USB port, you can connect a USB dongle or an audio dongle to so that you can have real-time audio output too.
Mm, that is a really good point. I'm doing some searches right now to see if anyone is writing about that. But
well, I mean, I seriously doubt we'll really be able to know that until they're out for real. I just hope that a gaming company like Razer isn't going, oh, yeah, just use some Bluetooth headphones for your gaming Android slobs.
I mean, yeah, one would think, but I would also, I mean, there have been plenty of hands-on with this from CES. I'm assuming that if I did some sort of a search for audio, like that would come up there.
You know,
because you're stealing the port, you're stealing the wired port, so you're absolutely right. Like I kind of think that they're probably, I mean, who knows?
You guys have me on every couple of months because I'm the only one who nerds out on audio tech. And it's no one is looking at this stuff right now for Razer.
But you're right. Yeah. I mean, I don't do any PC gaming without or with anything that's wireless. Everything is wired. when I'm gaming for that exact reason because of latency. Or, and I mean,
you're stepping up to some really nice like Audio Technicas or Sennheisers with, you know, dedicated audio dongles if you want to cut the cable. Like it takes a bit to get that, you know, low latency, high fidelity audio signal going. But I mean, you know, Razer also still made a bunch of USB-C headphone adapters for their phone. I would hope that, you know, there was some idea or some consideration for zero latency audio.
Yeah, I would too. I'm not getting a good feeling about this. I my gut just tells me that, yeah, there is.
Razer's still testing things out. They're not.
Jason, like, you went from real positive on this to like,
I know, super really became an owner.
I just can't do this anymore. Sorry, guys.
Oh, man.
No, wait, I have to stay here. I have to stay here till the very end, till the bitter end, I will.
We need you for the next story.
All right, okay. You know
what?
That
bit instead. I'm very impressed with your commitment to that bit.
Thank you.
Do you want a hardware bumper to make you feel better, Jason?
No. Go.
So that Victor doesn't play one of those goat field hardware bumpers. This actually has nothing to do with CES. This was just extra, and I felt like, well, we got to talk about this because this was weird.
This was in my feed.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Someone took to Reddit last week to report that their Xiaomi Mija camera linked to their Google account was actually streaming random video feeds to their Google Nest Hub camera stream. So they were, basically this person owned a Xiaomi Mija camera, a security camera, went to their Google Nest Hub to watch the video feed from it. And instead of seeing their own video feed, they saw other people, random people's video feeds, in one case, a sleeping baby, in another case, security cameras on a porch, a man sleeping in a chair. Good.
That poor man sleeping in a chair. You just wanted to sleep. Why are you watching it?
This sounds like an art exhibit.
Not good at
man,
all.
No. Man sleeping in chair.
Right.
No, yeah.
Sleeping
right.
Baby.
Google almost immediately disabled Xiaomi integrations. Xiaomi identified identified that there was a problem. I think they're still working on it. Ultimately, Xiaomi services through Google's assistant setup is working again, but not for this particular camera. I think the number of people that it affected was like very small, like in about 1,000 people that it could have potentially affected. Obviously, this is like perfect for the news when something like this happens, because, you know, we talked about it earlier on Security Now with Steve Gibson. This is like worst case scenario for anyone who is on the fence about bringing a internet connected camera into their home. It's like, well, I don't know who has access to that video feed. And then you find out that some random person that has a similar camera, you know, suddenly has the possibility of having that video feed. That's pretty bad. But apparently they're fixing it. Like I said, other integrations with other Xiaomi products have been restored once Google realized that it was just isolated to this particular camera. But
it's scary.
It is freaky.
Yeah, super freaky.
There's a lot of stories in this. I mean, just think about what happened to me a couple of months ago with my Nest cameras, and some like rando was talking to my husband through one of them. Super creepy. And that like is. Just blaring the Nest alarm, like just, you know, it's like they had the control panel in front of them and they were just pushing buttons all willy-nilly and just like causing all this chaos. And it would freak me out if I saw – it would freak me out if I was using one of these cameras, which, by the way, maybe I'm going to bring this up here and say I'm trying – you know, right now I have an audio solution, audio-only solution for listening to the baby when they're here. Because my husband and I talked a lot about this and how we feel about like all this video stuff. And I didn't want to like adopt a new video ecosystem into the house when we already have what we have. And so we were thinking, oh, well, why don't we use one of the video cameras that we have as kind of a way to drop in when the audio isn't, you know, serving the purpose that we want. But then I see stuff like this and I think, like, I don't want some weirdo coming in and watching my baby sleep.
We should talk. We should talk offline after the show, Flo, because after being much closer to it, you're going to want to reconsider that video decision. And there are, like, I got a closed system, basically, that it is wireless, exactly. But it's not connected to the internet. It's not IP enabled or anything like that. I suppose somebody could link up to it and like figure out the whatever it is, but you'd have to have the same brand and based where I am in an apartment building and stuff, I figured the odds of that were fairly slim. But yeah, I chose a non IP enabled video solution for that same reason. But
exactly
after the year I've been through, and I'm sure Juan and Jason can back me up on this, you're gonna want to see what's going on in the room when you're not there. Trust me.
Yeah, yeah, so, I thought about that. Talk offline, but just things to consider, because this is these are becoming bigger and bigger news stories, especially you know Ring just had its big security breach this is people are talking about it and the stories are just getting more and more
I think it's the right time too. Consumers actually seem to be driving a good chunk of this discussion also, with privacy laws going into effect state by state, and there is a general sentiment, or at least a general frustration that we can only do so much. There's only so much an average consumer can do to protect things that then have to link up to cloud services and online services. Mm-hmm. And when these types of platform issues come up, it can be really disheartening. So I think I'm very encouraged in one respect that 2020 will probably be a very solid year for leading discussions on how to improve the security of these products. Everything wants to be smart. All of these manufacturers, if you caught the LG keynote for CES, it was all about AI refrigerators and what the next stage of machine learning, artificial intelligence. I'll buy your orange juice for you. I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave. kinds of computing futures were like. But as the consumerism side of this just rallies, it's just moving so fast, we're all going to have to now come back and say, like, well, how do we even protect against some of these intrusions? And how do we, a strong password and two-factor authentication might not mean anything if there's a problem with the platform.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Who can you trust? What can you trust when you're bringing a camera into your house? I don't even know. I think the closed system approach is probably the best way to go as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I went deep on it, and I'm glad I got the Juan seal of approval here. That was because we thought about it, and it's like, oh, it'd be great to see you while I'm at work, whatever. And then we're just like, no, we don't know. Just closed system. That's the way to go. You only need it. We have a small apartment. Only need it at home. Yeah. So I'm glad. Thank you, Juan, for validating me.
No, completely. And what's funny, and Flo, you can obviously take this with whatever research that you're doing too. I found that the closed loop systems were actually more convenient too. That delay in firing up one of those cameras.
Going into the cloud and then,
It's bouncing off of a server somewhere miles away and then coming back to my house, as opposed to just flipping the switch and just like those audio monitors. That became a much bigger sell. The security and the privacy and everything else too. Yeah, that was the icing on the cake. I found that it was a better experience just going to a closed loop.
Just a quick side note. This baby gear world, which I have just started diving into, I've been doing some work on it too. Holy crap, it is expansive. But
it's expansive, but it's also funny because not to be all about parenting, but it's like we were looking back because my twins just turned one, and we were looking back on the past year and some of the stupid decisions we made in and around gear and things like that. Like when they first came home, we're like, we don't need a diaper pal. We'll just put the diapers in the trash. and that lasted 2 weeks, and we're like, oh my God, what were we thinking? Right. And then you go down the rabbit hole of diaper pail technology and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, of which, by the way, Flo, I'll send you. We didn't do the diaper genie. We got one that keeps the smell in, and it's great. And it's fantastic. It was cheap. It was great.
Oh, don't worry. But then, I have one.
Oh, great. And then we made some other stupid decision. We're like, we don't need to do that. And then like a month later, we're like, oh yeah, we were totally wrong there. Yeah, so it's just funny how it's like you do all the research and then you think you figured it out and then you get in it and it totally changes.
Well, let me just tell you, since we're on All About Parenting, that in my experience,
my
oldest is 9. That doesn't change, Ron.
Awesome.
As it goes along, you keep thinking, you always think as the parent, you know now. And then you realize, oh, I guess I didn't know.
Has the technology advanced in washing the bottles, Juan? I mean, Ron?
No, it hasn't. But that was the other thing, was that, like, we don't need a bottle warmer. That talk about, like, overly spoiled. We'll heat up water in the kettle and we'll pour it into the bowl. We'll put the bottle in the bowl. After the first month, like, oh Jesus Christ, let's get a bottle warmer. Like, it made it so much easier and faster. So.
Oh, Ron, your mic just switched over to your other mic. I think the babies have hacked into your system.
They've hacked your mainframe.
The closed system.
Yeah, you need a closed system for your microphone. All right, Flo, reel us back in. We got an email.
Oh, not about me. So this is actually an email from Brian. And remember, if you want to send us an email, you can do so at AAA@twit.tv, or you can leave us a voicemail. We like those too. 347-SHOW-AAA. Just give us a call.
Brian
writes in, Happy New Year to you. I've been listening since 2010. For a decade. You all are a staple in my podcast rotation. My son wants me to play Fortnite with him when we're not at home in front of the Xbox. He tries to get me to play on my phone with him. I'm bad enough as it is on the Xbox. On the phone, it's a horror show. However, I recently learned that there are controllers that can be attached to the phone that mimic an Xbox controller, allowing one to have that familiar console feel, but on a mobile device. I did the obligatory Google search and determined that there are as many of these things out in the world as there are grains of sand. Indeed. I'm wondering if you all have ever run across this and know of a brand or two that you can recommend as trustworthy and at least a decent quality. Oh, my daily driver is a Galaxy Note 8. Thanks very much, and thank you for the amazing work. Brian, you've written in the right people. Now, I do love gamepads, but I don't use anything in the next-gen console realm. All of my stuff is like vintage gaming, so all the 8-bit dough, Sega Genesis controller, the Nintendo one, the SNES one. I have all those because I wanted to be able to play old classic games the way that I did when I was a kid. However, if you go on a quick little Google search, which I know that you did because you ran into lots of grains of sand, you will find that some of the brands that make PC gear are also really great for this sort of thing. Now, 8-Bit Do does have non-vintagey controllers if you want to check those out. But for your particular situation for playing Fortnite, you probably want to check out the SteelSeries Stratus XL. Now, it's affordable price. It's $40. And it gives you all the same controls that you would get on an Xbox. Oh, and Juan is holding one up now.
Look at that. Live demo.
And do you like it, Juan?
I love this thing. It is so good. So you get a little puck.
See?
You can connect it to a PC. You can connect it over Bluetooth. And because he's on a Note 8, which is the right answer for gaming, he still has access to a headphone jack. Nice. And there's nothing that blocks the audio, because I care about audio and I care about your ears. No, these things are actually really, really cool. I'm not so much into first person shooters anymore. I'm more of like a twin stick shooter and arcadey kind of game, but game player. But this has been a phenomenal buy. And the fact that they can pull double duty, like you were saying, Flo, with PC gaming is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. So SteelSeries, Stratus XL, check it out. Sold everywhere you get your gaming peripherals.
Anywhere fine gaming peripherals are sold. Also, I should just add, like, the Xbox One controller. Like, you can get one of those. It's $47 bucks, and you can buy one, and it'll work.
I have also had pretty good experiences using PlayStation DualShock 4.
Okay.
You connect those over Bluetooth. Those usually work pretty well. It's just the funky thing about Android, for as good as it's gotten in getting more PC ports and more console ports, we still don't have any kind of unified controller experience. So sometimes a controller is going to work and you can map buttons and customize that layout. If the game developer includes that kind of support, it's phenomenal. Otherwise, it can be kind of a mess. I mean, like, even trying to play some of our classic Android games like Shadow Gun, it wouldn't work on my Xbox One controller. It would work on my PS4. It works on this the Steel series. But, you know, if I'd only had one, it would have been kind of a coin toss whether or not it was going to work for that game. So a lot of this, especially in the Android layout, your mileage may vary. But so far, the one that I've had the best experiences with has been the Steel series.
Nice. There you go. Perfect episode for this email to appear on. So, Brian, check that out. Sounds like you got your answer. All right. We've got some app news. Let's blast through it.
Thankfully, no goats.
So. No goats. That we
2020
know
is goat free. And everybody knows I love innovative, crazy tech and stuff like that. And I do love keyboards. Stay tuned for the arena. and Samsung unveiled a keyboard that's got my attention at CES, despite the name. They unveiled the Selfie Type, which uses AI along with the phone camera to detect your hands on an invisible keyboard on the table in front of you. It was developed at an in-house incubator for strange ideas that may someday become commercially available. And they've got demos of this at CES. And we've seen this tech before in like sci-fi and things like that. I forget the show or the movie, but like it's a keyboard that projects on the table and you just type on the table and the camera picks it up. Amazing that Samsung has made this into a reality, and I want this. So normally I'm not so pro Samsung. Sign me up. I will be the president of the Samsung fan club if they make this commercially available.
You heard it here, folks.
This is amazing. Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. Like, it's neat.
I love it. I think it's great.
It's neat, but I just don't know if I'd be able to do it.
I really want to try it. I am super skeptical. We've been playing with projected and laser key again since like the Windows Mobile days. Yeah. You know, laser keyboards have been a thing. I am super positive on air gestures, where these early attempts. I mean, even starting with Samsung, you know, like Galaxy S3 and S4 to now, we're only just starting to figure out that we should be making these first steps simpler and nailing a couple core features and then expanding from there. I'm not sure. I think typing is an air gesture-y kind of thing that will be good. But I'm hoping, if anyone can figure it out, that Samsung can give us something compelling to build off of. Because there are so many so many future uses for our phones where like the compute power you keep in your pocket should be disrupting laptops now. For general consumers out there, the phone in your pocket is likely just as capable of getting all of your work done. And some of the things that hold us back are needing other accessories. So air gestures, you know, projected typing, the ability to throw your screen to another display or to a TV could seriously disrupt the laptop and desktop market. We've got to flesh these features out, though.
Yeah. Yeah, if it works. Well said. You rely
if it
so,
works,
yeah,
that's a big so if heavily. So many of these things.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But I'm curious to play around with that. I will definitely give it five minutes until it fails.
How could you not?
I hope it doesn't fail, though. Friend of the show, Luke Klinker, posted a blog announcing Pulse SMS going open source. Pulse SMS, of course, has been on this show a number of times. It was first released in 2016, one in the arena. I believe, Ron, you probably brought it to the arena.
I did.
Yep. Episode 328, way back when. The aim of moving this to open source is to get more developers on board with development, more stability, more features. Even before this, the app was getting a ton of support regularly, so this is just going to add more progress. Android versions, the Android version going open source joins the web app, the iOS app, desktop apps, Chrome apps, and Tizen apps in going open source as well. So, I guess progress moving forward, Pulse SMS going open source. Ooh, I don't know what that'll mean, but I guess we'll find out. Are you still using an SMS replacement app, Ron? Because I know there for a while you were.
I was until Google got Messages to be in a good place, and now Messages is awesome.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
So again, it's like we've seen the Google version of the app be less than what you need, so I've gone to third parties and then come back to Google when they figured it out. I mean, I've gone down the same route with email. Like I loved Spark and I loved all the other kind of email apps I was playing with, and ultimately I'm using the Gmail app because it's better than ever.
Yeah.
So,
do any of you think that a move towards open source might be better or worse for privacy, security? I mean, I caught your episode a couple of weeks back talking about RCS and how it's not encrypted.
Yeah.
Is this a move that might help sort of assuage some other people's concerns about how their messages are being transmitted?
I mean, my general kind of thought on that is that when you move open source, you've got more eyeballs on, obviously, on the code underneath. Therefore, if there is anything strange happening, and which is not at all to say that Pulse SMS had any, there was no suspicion whatsoever around Pulse SMS being in this regard. But sure, I would say from my point of view, moving an app to open source kind of gives it a little bit more of an air of security, because it's kind of all there for everyone to see. So you can take a look at the code. You know whether there's something happening underneath that might be pointing in a strange direction, or might be coded strangely to do something that's unexplained or whatever. It's just there, and everybody has access to it. So I would say so. I don't know that that's necessarily the reason that Pulse SMS is going open source, but I think that's an added bonus for users, in my opinion. I don't know how everybody else feels, but yeah.
Right on. Cool. I'm still trying to catch up on some stuff like that, so I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. Flo, you got the next one.
So here's the thing I bet you forgot existed. I didn't. I didn't, though. So digital versions of print publication in Google News. Remember, that was a thing.
I love this. I use this for Wired and for Entertainment Weekly.
Yes, I was just going to say, you could use it for Wired and all these like Condé Nast publications. Well, now they're no longer. They're going bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye-bye. So users with active subscriptions will be getting emails from Google, the full amount refunded for the month. And from here on out, subscriptions are going away for good. Your accumulated library will still be in the app for past subscribed to content. The feature began back in 2012 with Play Magazines, which became Play Newsstands, and then it was eventually integrated into Google News. But now it lies in peace right next to Google Reader.
On that Google killed this page or whatever.
I'm really bummed about this.
Google. Killed by Google.
Yeah.
You know, I have become a subscriber to a lot of zines and just digital publications. Now there are independent publications that offer like PDF only subscriptions. So I'll get the PDF monthly in my inbox, and then I will load them up now into a third party app. You can do this in Google Play Books, like you can load in PDFs, but Moon Reader is really great, and you're paying for the Play Pass. The pro version is included, and it's phenomenal in terms of like its feature offerings and the shelf and everything. But I'm just thinking it's like this is such a bummer because they do this on the iPad. I mean, this is how people read their digital news subscriptions. They do it on the iPad in this manner, and we kind of are losing the equivalent. I guess you can get individual apps now. I subscribe to my newspaper digitally, but I have to use it through a separate app. It's not like integrated. So,
right. Yeah, this one makes me really sad because I feel like this isn't a killed by Google. I think this is just the writing on the wall for the current version of distribution. Because even Apple's having issues with their subscriptions too. I feel like Apple and Google actually went into this market with the best of intentions to try and find alternative ways to monetize some of this content. And I just don't think consumers went for the money. And then I'm also completely indicative of that. Like I think I picked up a bunch of subscriptions 2014 maybe, and then I'll let them lapse a couple of years later. So, you know, I'll put my hand up like I'm sad that this type of journalism and this type of magazine publishing is struggling as hard as it is. But I'm also just I'm not consuming this stuff like
well,
that.
I feel like people consume it now more independent, like Patreon.
Yeah,
that's where I get a lot of these digital subscriptions. So I just have my Patreon every month. Just subtracts all the money from all the subscriptions I have monthly. So I know like, okay, I'm paying $20 this month and like, here's where $3 is going. Here's where $7 is going. And then I get the PDFs and I just load them up and I kind of like it. I'm into it. And I like that I can support independent publishers and, I like this method, but I see it's not working as much for like the big guys kind of thing. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Shall we move on?
I think so, Ron. And you got a pretty fun one.
Yeah, I'm excited. So this is a little pre-arena time. We mentioned at the top of the show, or I don't know, that might have been before we did the show. But anyway, we've wrapped up the 2019 season of the Android Arena, and we're getting ready for 2020. But the other day on Twitter, our good friend Tony Morrow, who's one of the fine folks behind updating the wiki on the Twit site to update the Android app arena results every week, and we thank him and the other great people who do that. Tony took it upon himself, as he does every year, to run some charts and graphs about the data from the All About Android Arena in 2019. So here you can see the first graph is arena stats that shows the trend lines for each week and each episode. And you see the colors. So orange is Jason, brown is Flo, I'm yellow, and the guests are blue. And so you can see how it progressed through the year. You can see the moment that Flo kind of took off, which is fun to watch. You can also see my late season surge when I passed Jason, because Jason and I were neck and neck all season, basically. But you see that kind of one thing. So that was fun. So that was very cool. But then it gets, that's as you dig deeper into the data, if you scroll down there, Victor, for those watching on the video, and anybody who wants to see this can go on Twitter. He is Twitter at agizmo, @agizmo0. And he sent this to Flo, Jason, and myself. He's got charts of the numbers of times each of us placed first, second, third, and fourth, and what our final score was, as well as the number of arenas that we were in and our average finish. So what's really interesting here is that, you know, despite Flo running away with 164 points, she was in the most number of arenas, which does make explain it. I was in the least amount, which is interesting. And that average finish number of finishing 1.72 is how she made it happen. And it's interesting that these average finish numbers actually end up matching our results, where Flo came in first, the guest came in second, then I came in third, and Jason fourth, which is interesting. And then he goes even deeper into the data with representing the number of apps that we picked by genre and their average score. So Jason, very big on the gaming, 16 apparently games on the year, which is amazing. They gave you an average score of 2.5, which isn't so great. Flo came in with a tie of productivity and tools as her most done apps, each with an average score of 1.8 and 1.4, which is great. I had a nice fair spread, but I focused mainly on personalization and tools, both with an average score of 2.29 and 2.0. And the guests came in predominantly like Jason with games, with 13 apps with games with an average score of 1.54. So this data is amazing and it's great. So thank you to Tony Morrow.
Love it.
Thank you for keeping the wiki updated. Thank you to everybody who to what we do. We love you.
I love it so much.
It's
so fun seeing the data come alive, because I would never have the time or the inkling to kind of put it together the way fine folks like Tony are doing.
Love it. And I mean, it is nice to see him plot all this stuff. It does not mean that math matters still. I still could have won. I just chose to let Flo win.
Oh, okay. So. All right. Good. thanks for spelling that out, Ron.
Yeah.
We totally believe you.
Yeah, that was for Burke and Wade County. They enjoyed my war against math. So.
Math, that's fake news. All right, it's time for the first arena of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So
many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, we already know the results of last year's arena, but we didn't actually officially check in on the results of the last arena. So we'll do that real quick here. The last arena of 2019, Data Dex. So, Flo, you would have just continued to extend your lead. That was yours, right? Data Dex, 40%. Yeah, 40.8%.
It's a really good Pokemon app.
Yeah, apparently so. Second place was Snapseed. That was Team Guest at 28%. Third place, My Game, Very Little Nightmares at 17.6%. And fourth place, Ron's Ringmaster at 13.6%.
Fair enough.
So, but we don't need to wait, County. You're off the task tonight. You can just sit back and enjoy the arena and not feel like you have a duty.
Enjoy the battle.
To do.
So I think in the chat room, Brick might have a good idea. He says he sees no Some Rando on the chart. Maybe we can rename the guest to Some Rando.
This is this was spoken by Flo earlier in the episode. She said the word Some Rando. We'll think about that, Burke.
Is that not in people's vernacular?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it works.
The internet.
I knew what you were saying. Burke thinks that should happen. We'll talk about it. Burke's off his meds this evening.
All right.
All right. Let's do this. So, Ron, you are first.
Yes. So, as mentioned earlier in the episode, I do love me a good keyboard, and it's been a while since I've really embraced the weird in the keyboards. And as soon as I saw the screenshots of this app, I'm like, I have to have this. This is going in the arena. So, for the first arena of 2020, the first app, I present to you the Typewise keyboard, which brings you big keys and swipe mechanism and added privacy. So, you already went through the tutorial?
No, actually, I can do it again. See, here's
the tutorial. There we go. Okay, so Typewise is fascinating because, and this tutorial is great. So here you can see the screenshot of it. It's this honeycomb design of a keyboard. Looks like no other keyboard you've ever seen. And it allows you to type faster with two thumbs. And so this tutorial I thought was great. So Jason, you just go through with it. So here you press the space keys to move forward. All right, so in addition, and don't do anything yet, but if you look at the keyboard, it's not the standard QWERTY, although it's close to that. But what you also see is you've got more physical space for each key with that hexagon, and that allows you to not only to tap things to type on them, but there are gestures and swipes that allow you to do things. So in order to capitalize a letter, all you got to do is swipe up on it, and it will capitalize it as a type. So swipe up on W.
Oh, on W, sorry.
Yeah, you got to swipe up. You got to spell wow. So just do quick flick W, quick flick O, quick flick W. There you go. There's capitalized wow.
All right.
And so then additionally, special characters are easily accessible by holding down the letter of the key related to it. So in this case, you hold down N, you get an N and an umlaut, and that will do that. So there it is. And then for other special characters, if you tap, hold it, and swipe, you get a different character. So in this case, it's – I don't know what this one's called, but A with something. But you hold down and swipe right, and that kind of – it does that. So there
I
it
see.
Is.
So it had umlauts before, and then when I swiped right, it turned into an accent.
Exactly. So now quite often you need to get special characters and things like that. If you look, the question mark has a little exclamation point above it. So in this particular case, just tap on it to do the question mark.
Yep.
Right? And now if you swipe up, you'll get the exclamation point.
Oh, I see.
Right? Pretty cool. And then if you tap and hold, you will get the apostrophe, which is pretty cool.
And then hold and flick, and I get
tap, hold, and flick. Yeah, exactly. You get quotes. Yep. And then if you tap the 1, 2, 3 button, you get any special character that you might need. You get the special character above that. So if you do that, you'll get the at sign.
So I go. I see.
Yep.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's right there. There it is. Cool. And then, of course, they have emojis, right? So if you flick up on the emoji key, it unveils the whole keyboard of emojis, so you can choose what you want from there, so you can do your emoji conversations, and that's great. Woohoo. But yeah, so it's a really neat. Okay, so we can back out of this. You can close out of this now. Oh, actually, this is really cool. I'm sorry, I forgot this. You can, as you're typing, you can erase or scroll through the letters by swiping left and right on the keyboard, kind of, you know, making connecting the hexagons. So in this particular case, Jason is swiping to the left, and that's deleting keys as it goes back. Deleting characters as it goes back. It's very cool. So if you close out of the tutorial, that gives you a sense of what it is. The keyboard does allow you to switch between a standard keyboard and the hexagonal keyboard. So here in the settings, you can see you can choose the hexagon mode, or you can use a standard QWERTY that has all the stuff still tied in there. And I don't know, it's just really neat. It's a different approach to keyboards. It's a different paradigm. It takes some getting used to. But when you think about it, especially if you use two thumbs, it goes really fast. And if you get this – if you – in this day of huge phones, you know, with the Note and Pixel XL and things like that, it gives you a little more room for your typing and a different way to integrate with it. And you can unlock it within that purchase. Down there you see text replacements and vibration and intensity. That's all with the pro version. And it's $1.99 per month to get that, or – $9.49 for the year. So pretty cool. So completely different approach to keyboards. You know, I love a good keyboard replacement. Gboard is great, but sometimes you want to try something else. So give Typewise a chance. So there you go.
You can even learn to type faster.
Yeah, there's a fun game in there that helps you learn how to use it. So yeah.
Nice. That is Typewise keyboard, big keys, privacy, swipe.
Yeah. And it's got themes and things like that, so you can change how it looks and all that fun stuff. So
right on. Good pick.
Thanks.
All right. My app is called – let's see here. So my app this week is called My Shake. It's by the UC Berkeley Seismological Laboratory.
Ooh.
And so this is all about earthquakes because, you know, here in the Bay Area, we live in earthquake country. But there are earthquakes all over the world. And this is a way to kind of be in touch with when those earthquakes are happening, either worldwide because you're just generally interested in earthquakes and when they're happening and where and how strong and all the details surrounding it, or you can dial it in to your locale. You can see this is the Bay Area. Here's a 3.9 that happened. If I tap that, it's Morgan Hill, California, 6 days ago. On January 1st, if I tap into that, it shows kind of the different areas that it was felt. You can actually share that you felt it and where you were when that happened, and also get into information generated around this. You know, what different users have reported through the app. Did they report that there was no shaking? A bunch of them did. Some said there was light. Moderate, strong, severe didn't get any reports through the app. Also building damage, road damage, was the result of this earthquake? If there was any obvious damage that could be reported there. Looks like this was a very minor earthquake. It does say a couple of people reported two buildings destroyed. So not super duper minor. I guess, you know, the people who own those buildings don't think that it was a minor earthquake. Anyways, this is just one example here. If we go back, you can either see it on the map, which is how I had it, or a list, and see I have the list nearby, although nearby isn't perfect because we're seeing Alaska, we're seeing Oregon, that so I don't know how well that's dialed in. Recent, this is more kind of like all over. So I'm seeing Indonesia, Puerto Rico. You can dial into these and get more information about them if people are using the app in those regions and actually reporting them. But even if they're not, you still get, you know, the information that it actually happened. And you can learn more about the earthquake by tapping here. That ends up taking you to the USGS website, where you can kind of find more information there as well. Some of that ends up being here, including like an interactive map and everything like that. Now, what's cool about this is that if I go into this notifications area, when you download the app, you have global set on by default. So this basically means when there's an earthquake anywhere in the world that's reported through the app, you'll get a notification in your notification pane.
And maybe that's useful to you. But that's for 6.0 and above. So really severe earthquakes end up coming through. So maybe you're just generally interested in those. I have set up North Bay magnitude 3.5 and above, radius 50 miles, which basically means that, you know, when there's an earthquake in my general vicinity that's more than 3.5 on the scale, I'm going to get notified about it. I'm going to get a notification, be able to find some information about that relatively quickly. And this is the map that I've defined within the 50 mile radius. So so I feel like living where we live, that's pretty useful to have the ability to do that, to be able to. Okay, there we go. To be able to know, oh, I felt something, and be able to jump into the app and see what it's all about. You can also, if you feel shaking, you can hit I feel shaking, and it'll jump right in to say, is there, you know, an earthquake that's been triggered near you? And of course, reporting. Why can I not hit that? Reporting is possible through the app as well. So I think it's just an interesting way to get some visualization, get some interactivity around earthquakes. I notice what I do when there's an earthquake is I open up Twitter and see how many of my Bay Area friends are earthquake tweeting. Usually kind of confirms that shaking that I felt was actually something. This could be another way to kind of get a little bit more data around it and a little bit more insight into what that ground shaking actually was. It's called My Shake by UC Berkeley Seismological Laboratory, and you should check it out. It's free. Good source of information. All right, Juan, I have your game installed.
Yeah.
Although I really appreciated your layout because you had it on the control and everything. That's probably the right way to play it. I'm stuck in the very beginning of this game, so I'm hoping you'll help walk me out of it because I'm like, I know I'm missing something obvious.
Because this is a fantastic game. We are, of course, talking about Undead Horde from their side. I always like pretending like I'm some sort of trailer announcer for
Undead
movies.
Undead Horde.
You are a necromancer, a reanimator of the dead. Undead Horde is a necromantic action game with elements from action, RPG, strategy, and hack and slash. Reanimate almost any enemy and build an army of dozens of undead minions. Take command and send your undead war machine against the living and kill their leader, King Paladin Benevictor. This is just so much fun. So this developer, 10 Tons, is one of my favorite little indie arcade developers. All of these games that they've put out are actually PC and Switch titles first. And they've been doing a beautiful job of porting them over to Android. No microtransactions. It's they're, you know, reasonably priced games and all built on this sort of twin stick top-down view. But this is the first one that they've strayed from just being a regular twin stick shooter. So Neon Chrome and Tesla versus Lovecraft were arcadey shooters. This is an arcadey unit management RPG. So you are traveling the world of the living as a frustrated necromancer, and then as you encounter enemies and you kill enemies, you can raise the dead and bring them onto your team. And so it's a fun twist on the normal kind of platform shooter that they typically produce, and just a lot of replayability. You play through the main map. I would say that's probably if you really grind it, maybe a 10-hour campaign, but broken up into very nice fit for mobile little chunks, little mission areas that you want to clear this map out of all the living people. And maybe that's a couple minutes of gameplay. You can put your phone back down.
How come I can't get through this part, Juan? That's what I want to know. How come I can't get in there? The arrows tell me to go there, but I can't.
Well, I think you actually need to explore south from there. But so the other really exciting thing about when they port one of their Switch titles or one of their PC titles over, like this is the exact same game that you would play on a Nintendo Switch. There's not really anything to tap on the screen. It's really just the stick and then the controls. So it's saying like use the little hand, use your hands.
Okay.
So above the sword, you see those hands?
Yeah.
But what you might need to do is first go and pull like a lever off to the side. I actually haven't played the first gate in a really long time. But once you clear out the map, then you replay the same map, but with much harder enemies. So your necromancer continues to level up. You can control more different types of units like giants and paladins and archers. But then the entire map just gets increasingly more difficult as you progress through the game. So a lot of replayability. And this game, I think, is currently like maybe $15-$20 on a Switch. You can pick it up for $7 or $8 in Google Play, and it's regularly on sale. Over the holidays, I think it was down to $3.99. But this is just a wonderful developer making some really fun arcade games, and I just don't think they get enough attention because there's a general idea that gaming on Android isn't very good, but here's an indie developer that's really putting out some quality arcade titles and putting them out at reasonable prices. Like, you know, you pay $7 and then you play the game, and that's all the commitment that you're sort of in for. And it's well worth, I think, the prices that they charge.
Nice. I love it. If only I could figure out this first level.
I just don't know where to go.
I promise
people watching that it's not actually as hard as Jason is making it out to be. I think he's doing this so that his app will be viewed as more easy to use.
I promise I'm not. I literally got this far and said the arrows are pointing me over there. If I'm going down there, they're pointing up there. So I'm like, okay, so that's where I need to go, but I can't go in there. And there's no way for me to get in there. So I'm obviously missing something super obvious.
The only thing better than a good game is a good game Jason's frustrated with.
All right. Look, you guys, not going anywhere until I pass this level.
I'm gonna open up mine. I don't think I can actually go back to that first map. And once you get through there, you go to your crypt. And then once you're in your crypt, then you just go on and fight all the living people. And I don't think it's going to let me back over there to tell you how to get out of that.
Living people, huh?
It's okay. I'll just.
But it's a cute. It's got a cute story to it. You know, there are lots of jokes about, you know, being dead skeletons and zombies and stuff. And the tone of the game is obviously very cheeky. This isn't going to be like, satisfy that itch to play some Diablo or anything like that. But 10 tons. All of their games have been phenomenal romps, and I can't recommend their entire catalog enough.
Right on. Cool. It's called Undead Horde. And if you can solve the first level, email me, AAA@twit.tv, and tell me what I'm missing. And then I will continue playing it, and I'll be like, yeah, this is a pretty cool game.
While you guys go, I'll see if I can load it on another phone under a different account. And then see if I can figure it out.
I don't doubt that there's a solution. I just, man, I couldn't figure it out. While you do that, Flo, why don't you put up a progress bar and we'll see how long it takes. And I'm not just saying that because that's the game.
Yes, it is the game. So I brought something nostalgic to the arena today, extremely nostalgic. And this was actually suggested to me by friend of the show, Liam Spradlin. He and I, we always share like quote unquote vaporwave memes on social media. And he shared this with me and I was instantly hooked. So the app is called Progress Bar 95. And if you look at the icon, it looks like the Windows 95 sky wallpaper that, from back in the day. Now this app has a lot of in-app purchases, but if you are into the game, you can unlock a lot. So the nice thing about, okay, so go ahead and click through, Jason. We're starting up our computer. And the thing that you can't hear right now is that if you turn the sound up, you can actually hear the processor processing the way that you would back in the day. You just hear all the churning of the electronics in your motherboard. And you're presented here with this desktop. Just like the olden days, start a new game.
Wow.
And Clippy will both help you here and annoy the crap out of you, which I guess is exactly what Clippy does. So your job is to capture the loading bars as they come up from the top. There's going to be different colors that come in, and you got to make sure you might not want to be all the way at the top all the time, Jason.
Oh, because that's an error.
Yeah, but some of them are actually good. Like, some of them will give you like 2 times the progress bar so you can move faster. And so you'll get like power ups in the game. But notice there's the, you know, the UI lag as per the old Windows 95 experience. Oh.
Oh, I don't want those. Oh, they have to go in the empty part.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
When you put the progress bar out, you need to make sure to capture it in the empty part. It's actually somewhat challenging. It's not just like moving the progress bar around. It does get harder and harder. And as you advance, so here's the thing. You got to pay for the in-app purchases if you want to get rid of the ads.
Okay.
Because there will be, okay, and there you go. As you can see, you have your your hard drive space at the end. And so as you advance in the game, you'll have more things that you have to like deal with as you play the game. So I'm trying to follow along with what is on the video. Okay, this is your new device information, system information. We know Windows still kind of looks like this in this day. And so go ahead and just... anything.
Updates.
And right. It goes up all the way to progress bar 10. So just like Windows 10. You could change each level, unlocks a new wallpaper in the background. And as you increase in levels, you will have to deal with like, annoying pop-ups.
Oh, man.
And any other sort of, Clippy wants to talk to you. And Clippy will follow you around kind of thing. It's fun. It's a fun game to just kind of like play when you're like, I need to do something with my hands. And I really like this game too, just because they really up the ante on the nostalgia. And as you move through the game, you know, they promise endless gameplay basically. And as you move through it, you unlock different wallpapers, as I said, different icons, the aesthetic changes. So you can pay per system. Instead of jumping into a new game, why don't you exit out of this? Go ahead. Exit on Windows? No, don't hit the X at the top. X at the top of the window.
Oh, at the window. This window. There is no X there.
Hit on the background. Wait. Sorry.
How do you turn this Windows computer off?
Hey, you got a RAM upgrade, though.
Okay. That's good.
Okay.
See, maybe I just need to get
all
these
upgrades.
Now you
don't have to play the game. I think you can go back to the desktop.
How about, what if I go to the start?
Yeah, it's...
No, it just really wants me to do this.
Okay now you can exit.
There we go.
Okay, now go to the shop icon on the desktop.
Store, up left. Okay.
Okay, and this will show you like how much it. The game can, if you want to unlock everything, it's like $17, I think.
Wow.
So, but it is, you know, there's a support your devs if you want all that nostalgia. But as you play the game, you will unlock all of this. So it's really up to whether you just want to jump ahead.
So you don't have to buy these in order to play those levels.
No, you don't. It's just if you want to jump ahead and just you want all those new systems. But endless gameplay. And then if you want to exit out of this again, I just want to show you something very quick. Go to the start menu. And you'll see there's a little settings you can click on. It'll give you little settings. You can, you know, just like on Windows. And yeah, you know, you can choose your color. Color scheme. I think there's a calculator that eventually unlocks, like you'll unlock new programs in the start menu that you can use to kind of hone in on the nostalgia. So
awesome. I love it. Why didn't I bring this to the arena? This is amazing. It is called Progress Bar 95.
That's pretty cool.
and it'll take you back.
That's fun. I mean, it also makes me really want a launcher, like a Windows 95.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, that looks so much fun. But Jason, 95. I did figure out your conundrum. So
Yeah?
I can get you through Undead Horde if...
Okay.
Oh, there it is.
This is important.
This is critical. I don't know how important,
but it's important to me. Okay.
So do you have a little chicken following you?
Yes.
Did you raise the chicken?
Yes.
Okay. So this is to teach you how to send your units. So there's a skull with arrows to the left of your hand.
Okay.
So point in the direction of one of those pots and then send your chicken to go and break the pot.
Oh, look at that.
Now hit that same button and it will recall the zombie chicken.
Okay.
And then go and do it on the other side, and then that should unlock the gate.
So it's just
to teach you that your units are more versatile. You're actually not super robust, so you've really got to work your units to make it through a lot of the different challenges throughout the game. And they've got a bunch of like really fun puzzles and traps and things like that that will then help you. Your undead minions will help you progress through there.
There we go. All right, cool. We got
Huzzah.
There. We got there. It was
now
a team
you can play
effort.
The game for real, because that's not even part of the game yet.
No, this is all tutorial. The tutorial stumped me. This is story of my life. All right, thank you for that. And that's a free tip for everyone that wants to make it through the tutorial. All right,
there you go.
Four apps this week. We got to round this up. Typewise Keyboard, My Shake, Undead Horde, and Progress Bar 95. Go to twit.to/AAApoll 454 and place your vote for your favorite app or game this week. Victor is circling, or I think he is. I can't see. Oh, I see. He was putting up the poll thing. And Progress Bar 95 gets the vote. There we go.
Hard to
Thanks,
argue.
Victor.
Very hard to argue. Uh-oh. I'm sensing an early start for Flo this year. That's it for this week. We went a little long, but it was a lot of fun.
Always worth it.
Juan, thank you so much for hopping on for the first episode of the 20s.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to be episode one of 2020. This is awesome.
Appreciate always your time and you hopping on with us. SomeGadgetGuy.com. Anything you want to promote? Anything specific?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have a bunch of stuff from CES. I'm not in Vegas, but I'm helping the Newegg team produce a lot of the content that they're shooting from the show floor. So you can catch that on the Newegg YouTube channel. I'm going to be going through a whole slate of lifestyle tech. One of the things I'm really excited to be also branching out into is also talking about like alternative computers and stuff. I'm trying out a bunch of Intel Nooks. So that's going to be a lot of fun to play with. And then if you'll pardon just the sort of health and science plug, a major focus for the Some Gadget Guy channel in 2020 is going to be hearing health. So I'm going to be kicking off a campaign under the hashtag 2020 hearing, just kind of a little pun on 2020 Wow. vision, but it's the year 2020, but we should treat our ears with a little bit more respect. So we're going to have interviews with doctors, with manufacturers, and just a broader discussion on how we can stay safe while using our entertainment technology. But then also some ways that we can use our technology to better protect our hearing, because it's an epidemic of hearing loss out there. And I'm the audio nerd, so I'll talk about it.
Love it.
On my YouTube channel.
Love it. So many people, yeah, right? Like we're so used to having these earbuds in our ears and not thinking twice about how loud we're jacking things up. And
then also how those things can help. I'm writing up a blog post now just about going to see a movie with my 4-year-old daughter, and it was too loud for her. And you're like, I want to make sure that my daughter is empowered to actually tell me that and not like, I'll just grin and bear it. And everyone else in the theater is just going to kind of, sit through it. She, as a 4-year-old, just said, it's too loud. And you're like, oh my gosh, I need to pay attention to that. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
it is. I've worn earplugs to movies before because this is just too loud. This is not happening.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm that nerd. I do that all the time. If it's a concert, if it's a movie, something like that. But so you get funny looks, and I feel like we can maybe start chipping away at some of that stigma. Like, it's okay to be the guy at a concert with earplugs in. It's better for you. You'll probably enjoy the concert more. For movie theaters, it helps block out the sound of all the other people who chew with their mouths open. It's actually kind of nice.
That's true. That noise doesn't quite get through the earplug. right. Not powerful enough.
Right on. So that's somegadgetguy.com for folks who want to check in on all that great work. And yeah, thanks for hopping on CES week with us.
My
really
pleasure.
Appreciate it. Ron, what about you?
Yeah, you can. It's a new year. It's a new you. It's a new me, and same old social handles. So go follow me at Twitter at RonXO and on Instagram at RonXO. And just getting ready for another new year of fun. Also, I've got a little side project called Scorbit, which is about pinball at scorbit.io, where we are connecting pinball machines to the internet. And we're super excited because this weekend we're going to be at Indisc, which is a big tournament in Southern California and Banning, California, actually, at the Museum of Pinball. And we're gearing up for some pretty big announcements within the next couple of months and looking at shipping product this year. So it's going to be a big year for Scorbit. So stay tuned there. Sign up for the mailing list.
Love it. Yeah. Can't wait to see what 2020 is for Scorbit.
It's going to be big. Yeah. So,
right on. Yeah. Cool. And what about you, Flo? I know 2020 is going to be a big year for you.
Yeah. So
you're shipping.
Yeah. Okay. So go to FloFeed, FlorenceZion.com, if you want to. I've been updating it. I still got a couple more things to add. But I updated it recently with some of the articles that I've posted at Medium's 1-0 vertical. I'm working with Megan Maroney as an editor over there. It's a pretty great gig because I get to kind of explore a different kind of writing style. And I've also been working on a lot of guides because as I'm getting ready to bring this baby into the world, I was like, I should probably figure out what all this stuff is that I'm supposedly supposed to buy. Which, by the way, I'm an expert now. So.
You might as well write about
car seats, strollers. I got you covered.
Yep. You might as well.
Of course, you all know about my side project, Honestly Tech. I have banked a couple episodes over the holiday. I just need to edit them, put them out, and I'm planning on putting those out before my self-imposed maternity leave. And so just kind of stay tuned for that. That is not going away. It's just... it's seasonal at this point because life is seasonal. I mean, and I'm already like planning Twitch streaming I want to do down the line. So it's, I have all these things in my head for what I want to do for 2020. But first, let's have a baby.
Yeah, because that's a great way to get stuff done.
Yes, right. You just
I know. My husband's like, you know, you'll probably want to get into Twitch streaming when the baby's here just to get away from us. I'm like,
because I'm sure the baby will love that too.
Yeah. That could be the case.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you, Flo. Awesome. And thank you, Victor, for not playing that extra hardware bumper.
Oh, it's tempting.
I know. I know.
We don't need to do that to Ron right at 2020.
Let's, I know you really
appreciate
want
it.
To. I appreciate your restraint. And I'm doing This Week in Google tomorrow. Leo and Ant are both in Vegas for CES recording coverage. So definitely check out twit.tv for the specials that they're going to be posting from CES. But I'm filling in for Leo. So I did Security Now today. I do This Week in Google tomorrow. We'll talk about some of this stuff and a whole lot more Google stuff tomorrow afternoon. I'm really looking forward to that. So look for that. As for this show, this podcast publishes every Tuesday evening. You get it late in the evening on Tuesday. Subscribe at twit.tv/AAA. That's where you can go to find all the information that you need to know about All About Android. You know, when we record, links to subscribe, all of our videos, all the way back to episode 1. Basically a full decade's worth of episode. How many times can we say the word decade on this episode of All About Android? And that is about it. I don't think there's really much more to talk about other than to say we love you last decade and this decade and going forward. Mm-hmm. And we will see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.